really hope we beat their ass today.
And I'm going to tell you what, the tortillas were flying.
This is the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. You're hearing the voice of Jeremy Gillen, and it's time to enter a second half of the season, starting with a formidable Iowa State team. This week, we're interviewing Levi Stevenson, who is the site manager of Wide Right Natty Light, to get you guys in the mood, to get you guys pumped up for Cornpocalypse. Levi, are you well? Are tacos on the menu this week?
I think so. I'm trying to figure out exactly. Actually, that's a lie. I know so because we're hosting a game watch in Ankeny, and I know for a fact that they are bringing a taco truck to the brewery. So, yes, there are tacos on the menu for this weekend.
All right, so the age-old debate, I guess, between our blog sites, is it corn tortillas or is it flour tortillas for you guys?
Depends on what you put in them. If you're putting in if you're putting in maybe like beef or you're putting in something heavy, you got to go with a flour tortilla. If you're putting in some, in my mind, if you're putting in something like fish or maybe chicken, you go corn tortilla.
Oh, see, thank you. Everybody, look, peace can be had. All it takes is logic. Thank you, Levi.
I mean, corn is better, but it just depends what you put in it.
Well, yeah. And thus the dissension continues. At 4-2, the Cyclones are off to a good start with a lot of potential ahead of them. All of it starting this weekend against Texas Tech on their homecoming. What is the overall mood of the fan base, Levi? What's been going right and what has been going wrong so far this season?
Overall, it's pretty good, honestly. Generally, so... The way Iowa State football seasons have worked the last now three seasons is that we come in, we're like, we're super hyped up, and then we come crashing down for a couple weeks when we struggle in September a little bit, and then October comes back around, and we are extremely confident, I would say. Maybe to a fault, but, you know, that's just kind of where we're at because we had to deal with bad football for so long, so as soon as our – and we never got to brag about our football team for 120 years. So the fact that now we can kind of brag about our football a little bit, we get them. We're going to do it. We're going to take our time. We're going to take our opportunity because we all know that at any point in time, it could come crashing back down to the earth. But honestly, overall right now, we are pretty confident. The defense is pretty much living up to everything that we thought it would be. And we can talk about this a little bit too, about this game against West Virginia last weekend, where we kind of got to flex the muscles on the depth a little bit. And obviously on the offensive side of the ball, we've got Brock Purdy. Pretty hard not to be confident when you have Brock Purdy as your quarterback. And the receivers, the offense right now, I actually just saw a tweet from, I think it was from Frogs of War, Parker Fleming, he does their stats or whatever, that right now if you did a power rankings in the Big 12 based on average rank within the conference for offense and defense based on expected points, expected points average, something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is. Expected points added, which essentially is just on any given play, what statistically can you expect, how many points can you expect to be added to the scoreboard? And right now, Iowa State is sitting at first in defense, I believe, and second in offense. So the average ranking is 1.5, which would be first in the conference from a power ranking perspective from his kind of crude expected points allowed or expected points average ranking there. But anyways, so the offense is actually better than it has been the last few years. The running game is really hit or miss. We just finally had a running back do well. Breece Hall, the true freshman, had 130 something yards and three touchdowns against West Virginia. Obviously not a huge defensive juggernaut this year or anything like that, but you feel pretty good if your true freshman running back is giving you that type of performance. Plus obviously Brock Purdy is I'm pretty sure he's still top 10 in the country in total offense. He's been unbelievable, and in the right, he brings in the added dimension in the run game that it makes him really, really hard to stop because obviously we know that he can chuck the ball around quite a bit, and the offensive line is improving too. So, I mean, there's lots of things you can nitpick on both sides of the ball, but for the most part, I mean, honestly, the team is as good as it has been the last 5 years. Yeah, basically, it's the best that Iowa State has been under Matt Campbell.
Certainly a good way to put it, and I think a lot of people are noticing, especially since College Game Day, going to Ames for the first time in history, right?
Yep.
Despite the outcome of that game, I mean, that's pretty great. That's a pretty great achievement.
Huge. It's a, yeah. I mean, it's a big commercial for the university, essentially, is what Jamie Pollard called it. And, you know, the you could tell just watching the broadcast, the energy that day was unbelievable. The crowd was huge at game day. We heard lots of different things from ESPN people saying it was like, they quote an all timer that they, you know, it was like, it's like up there when they went to Pullman and when they go to Fargo and stuff like that. You know, it's up there as far as just overall game day atmosphere, just because, Iowa State's had a passionate fan base for a long time, and now they're finally being rewarded for their loyalty. And now we've, you know, had that opportunity to, on game day, to show off what we are as a fan base, and it was an incredible experience. I didn't actually end up making it over into any of the game day stuff because my tailgate lot is on the other side of the stadium, and I was inebriated. Far too inebriated, too drunk. I was far too drunk to walk over to ESPN game day.
By 8 a.m., you were too far gone, huh?
My dude, that's how we tailgate up here.
That's what I hear.
You park in your spot at 5 a.m., you get out of the truck, you open the tailgate, you pull out the tent bag, and then you crack a beer. And you drink one while you're setting up, and then you just go from there.
And I guess everybody wants to know, is it all Natty Lights?
Busch Light. Bush Light's our thing.
Okay, so do you have why the Natty Light on the blog handle?
Okay, so I get asked this literally all the time. Like,
if it's touchy, we don't have to talk about it.
No, it's not touchy. No, it's just I get asked this literally all the time because it's understandably a point of confusion. So, Iowa as a state, Iowans and Aaron, we drink an absurd amount of Bush Light. Like, I don't know what, I'm not sure if we account for the majority of all Bush Light sold, but it's not far off. I think it was in 2016 or 2017. I saw a thing that, the state of Iowa went through like 30 something million gallons of Busch Light in that year, which is like a pony keg for every single man, woman, and child. We drink Busch Light. Where the Natty Light comes from is, Iowa State's basketball coach back in the early 2000s, Larry Eustachy. Obviously we had, if you're not a really diehard basketball fan that's been around for a while, you might not know this, but Iowa State basketball was really, really, really good in the early 2000s. Like, probably should have been a national champion good, because they had Marcus Fizer and Jamal Tinsley and some really, really great teams, and everything was really great. And then we went down to Mizzou to play a game, and Larry Eustachy, known to be a bit of a partier, got caught at a sorority house partying with a bunch of Missouri sorority girls. And he's standing, there's kind of an infamous picture of him standing in the middle of a bunch of these girls. And he's like, I think he's kissing one of them. And he's in plain view in his left hand, holding up a can of Natty Light. And that is the picture that basically brought you Larry Eustachy down. That's the one that took him down and got him fired from Iowa State, essentially. And then Iowa State entered a period, a basketball dark ages for about a decade.
Good and Lord.
So that's where the Natty Light comes from.
Do you think the penalty would have been the same had he been drinking Busch Light? Do you think it was just a stain on the whole state of Iowa that he resorted to Natty Light?
Unfortunately, Larry had plenty of his own personal problems. I think it probably was. If he didn't get caught that day, it probably would have been another day.
I guess that's fair. You can't hide your problems for too long.
Now, he's actually sober now, but he had some actual problems there for quite a while. But it is kind of it is what it is at this point. Now it's just one of those things you look back and laugh at it.
Right. Well, Tech fans, just be glad that Chris Beard's greatest vice is Whataburger at 3 a.m. Right now, Iowa State opens up as a touchdown favorite in Lubbock, which is certainly disappointing for Texas Tech fans. But a big part of that is, like you mentioned, this Cyclones really upward trend on the offensive side of the ball since the beginning of the season. What kind of improvements have been happening since the beginning that inspire such confidence and prowess going forward through the conference?
Well, one thing for sure is that the offense has been remarkably efficient. I think they're still sitting at sixth, but for a while they've been bouncing between like fourth and sixth in the country in yards per play pretty much the entire season. So they're moving the ball extremely well. At the beginning of the season, they didn't always convert that into touchdowns like they needed to, whether it was a bad penalty or a turnover. I think they're still perfect on the season in the red zone, where they've scored a touchdown on every single red zone drive so far, I believe. don't 100% quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure we're still at 100% efficiency in the red zone. And we move the ball really well, but for whatever reason, between the 20 and 35 yard line is Iowa State's kryptonite, or it had been. It's not really anymore because it seems like they've kind of broken through that slump, but for a while that was kind of the kryptonite. And an inconsistent running game was a problem. But it seems like up to this point, if Iowa State has needed to run the ball, you know, either a running back has stepped up or Brock Purdy has stepped up and taken the ball himself. So the offense moves the ball in a very efficient rate. They actually are getting more explosive plays than they did last year. The interesting thing about the Iowa State offense is that a lot of people saw that Dave Montgomery and Hakeem Butler left. Huge losses, no doubt. You know, probably both of them would be top two or three to ever play that position at Iowa State. Though I would say most people would argue that neither of them are number one, but they're very, very close. Either way, huge, huge, huge losses. But interestingly enough, the offense is actually significantly more efficient this year after we have them. And part of it goes back to last year, the offense revolved around Dave Montgomery and Hakeem Butler. So they could kind of focus in on those two guys and then just kind of let the other guys try to beat them. And they sometimes did and sometimes didn't. But now you don't have that one dude that you're focusing all your attention on. So now I think that this is two games in a row. Like, I think it's almost every game this season so far that Brock Purdy's completed a pass to like nine or more receivers in a game. He's very Drew Breesian in his distribution of the football. Now you still have some guys that can definitely step up and make lots of catches. You know, DeShonte Jones had 15 in a game earlier this season. And he's had other games of like 10 receptions, but then last game he didn't have a single reception, and LaMichael Petway had 8. Charlie Kohler has been, he's right now, I think, you know, put as much stock into Pro Football Focus as you want, but Charlie Kohler's graded out as the second best tight end in college football up to this point. Tariq Milton's got a couple long touchdowns. Dylan Sainer's been very good. Chase Allen's got a touchdown. Sean Shaw, the redshirt freshman, has got a couple touchdowns. Joe Skates caught his first touchdown last week. So there's weapons all over the field. And now that Breece Hall seems to have pushed himself ahead to be the number one running back now, because he's not only a very good runner, but he's a good pass catcher. And we found out this past weekend that he is a devastatingly good pass blocker, which is what you need, which is very uncommon for a true freshman. And it is the key to staying on the field in a Matt Campbell offense. If you can't pass block, you're not going to be on the field as much as you probably want to be. So you have a plethora of weapons that force a defense to divvy up their focus all over the field, and they can't just hone in on one guy. So that's part of the reason that Iowa State's offense has been significantly more efficient than it was last year. And I think that's part of the huge reason that, you know, everybody's higher now on the program than almost they ever have been. And I think that's probably the reason that we're seeing for the touchdown spread against, you know, this coming into this weekend, is because I think, you know, if you don't agree with this being a fair assessment, I would, you know, feel free to correct me. But I would say that the Texas Tech defense has been decent at times, but tends to give up some big plays, especially over the top. Because I think that right now they're leading the conference in bottom of the conference, however you want to describe it, in big plays allowed. But I think it's 20 plus, 30 plus, 40 plus, 50 plus, 60 plus, and 70 plus yard plays. I think Texas Tech is leading the conference in number of those given up. So when you have a team that is fine with, like, Iowa State, where the passing game generally is more patient, it's more in the 5 to 15 yard range for the most part, but now you're coming up again, but it does have the deep threats like Tariq Milton and Joe Skates, and to a certain extent DeShonte Jones, that now you're coming up against a team that has a little bit of a leak at the top. And I think that's probably where that's coming from, is they're probably looking at that and seeing, is, you know, if that Iowa State may be able to take advantage in the more explosive plays.
I think that's a fair assessment, and there's certainly the numbers to back it up, that Texas Tech certainly has a inefficiency at the deep ball.
Right.
The big play, the big explosions. But I think part of me wants to say, okay, let's exclude Oklahoma, because Oklahoma has Rick-rolled everybody they've played. But at the same time, Arizona, we saw Texas Tech give up a lot of big plays to Khalil Tate late in the game, which lost Texas Tech that game. But hey, it's easy to see why Iowa State fans are excited about the possibilities going forward. There's certainly a lot of offensive weapons for Iowa State. And like you said, sometimes when the stars leave, you start to see how many true talented players you have underneath them.
And you know, the thing too is that the thing is that's the most exciting is right now I think they're still at sixth in yards per play in the country, and then the defense is really, really good as well. But the exciting part is that we know that neither unit has actually played as well as they could have. They've both left a lot on the table. And that's the exciting part, is knowing that there's still a lot of room for growth on two units that have been very good up to this point of the season.
Yeah, I was expecting Iowa State to be undefeated, especially by this point in the season. I imagined their real gauntlet would be, you know, not this week, but the next following.
And you know, they should be undefeated. They should have beaten Iowa, and they should have beaten Baylor, especially Iowa. They should have, because it was completely self-inflicted that they, you know, there was no reason they should have lost to Iowa. And actually, going week by week, as Iowa continues to struggle to score any points at all, it's looking more and more embarrassing that we lost to them.
Right. And
Baylor's a good team. Baylor's well, we think Baylor's a good team. Iowa State did not play as well as they should have. They took them way too long to turn on. Now I don't want to get into the
controversy.
Did you hear about the shade gate?
No. Oh yeah, with the tents and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't let Iowa State have any sunshades. And Baylor's sideline was 40 degrees cooler.
No, my God. Okay.
Yeah, they measured Iowa State's sideline at like 133 degrees or something like that, and Baylor's was like 95.
Dude, you gotta be
kidding. And it was funny because as soon as the fourth quarter rolled around and most of the field was shaded, magically Iowa State had energy.
Oh, wild how that happens.
So that was funny how that happens. But you know, there's a lot of other things Iowa State should have done differently to win that game in the first place. But you know, both losses are by combined 3 points. So, you know, at the end of the season, if we get to this point and Iowa State has two conference losses and we lose out on the beginning of the Big 12 championship game because of the tiebreaker to Baylor, then, you know, we're going to look back and really be kicking ourselves and say, damn, why didn't we win that game? Kind of like we did for the TCU game last year, where they just totally just crapped themselves and they should have won that game and could have been in a better position come November. You know, so you can always look back and say coulda, shoulda, woulda, but you know, there's still a lot of football going forward for Iowa State, especially. Well, for any team, obviously, right. Everyone has the same amount of football going forward. But you know, just because of the amount of growth that's available there for the Cyclones, I think it's a really exciting time to be an Iowa State football fan. I can't. It's hard to describe. Just because. For coming from a program that lost a lot for so long, still less than Kansas State, by the way, but still lost for quite a bit. You know, being able to talk positively about a football program is nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I apologize if I'm droning on about this, about the team.
You can stay in nostalgia as long as you want, or created nostalgia. It's fine. So last week, Texas Tech put on a pretty strong defensive effort against Baylor, albeit throwing in the towel at the end. Levi, is there anything from this Texas Tech defense that gives you pause? I mean, how should Texas Tech defense is there anything on this defense that actually gives you concern going into the game for this strong Iowa State offense?
You know, I'll be totally honest with you, I haven't watched a lot of Texas Tech this season. I haven't like watched a lot of film yet, just because I get busy during the week and stuff like that, but I'm gonna probably watching some tonight and tomorrow to get a little bit better idea of kind of what's going on for when we do some articles later this week. But as a general, just looking at stats and just things I'm hearing about different individual players, there isn't necessarily a one particular thing that I'm saying, like thinking like, oh my, you know, this is going to be the big one. Obviously, fill in the name for me. What was the linebacker that got like 16 or 20 tackles or whatever it was a couple weeks ago?
It's Jordan Brooks.
Yes. Jordan Brooks. Okay. Yes. He's a middle linebacker, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, having that big tackler and having the big time tackler right in the middle of the defense is going to be very helpful for sure. Because one thing that I mentioned before, Iowa State's passing game is predicated on in the flats, in the 10 to 15 yard range, stuff like that. All area where or distances, I should say, where the middle linebacker will be a key component in coverage, especially because Iowa State likes to run a lot of mesh concepts, which essentially, for anybody that's not familiar with a mesh concept, it's essentially two crossing routes at different depths, which is designed specifically to confuse linebackers and force them to make a decision between covering the overtop crossing route or the underneath route. So having a talented player like Jordan Brooks in the middle will definitely benefit Tech. I think it will come down to for Iowa State's offense versus Texas Tech's defense is the ability for is Texas Tech's ability to make open field tackles. Because if one thing that Iowa State's receivers are, Tariq Milton is good after the catch. They're not spectacular after the catch. They're okay. Like if they're given an opportunity, they'll get some yards. But they're not ones that, it's not like Hakeem Butler, where Hakeem could just create yardage because he would just muscle people and he could just kind of keep trucking forward. Iowa State has a lot of smaller receivers this year, so they're not necessarily going to create a ton of yardage on extra yardage on their own. They'll catch it and kind of go to the ground for the most part. So if Texas Tech's secondary keeps wrapping up receivers and doesn't allow them to get any extra yards, it could be tough sledding for Iowa State, and they'll have to rely on the running game. If Texas Tech's defense struggles at tackling, then Iowa State's receivers may have an opportunity to keep to pile on a little bit of extra yardage after the catch, and it keeps the offense rolling. So I think that could be a huge, huge key come this weekend is how Texas Tech's defense tackles.
That's enlightening. For Red Raider fans out there, keep in mind that we have an extremely strong defensive core in Douglas Coleman, who leads the nation in interceptions with 6 on the season already. Zach McPherson, the transfer from Penn State, already getting a number of pass breakups, as well as a number of others. Adrian Fry might be back in the mix this week. There's a lot of opportunity here if Iowa State tries to rely on the short game for Texas Tech defensive backs to make more noise in this game than they have in the past, just because it's where they seem to fit in. Levi, how do you think, if you had to give like one, I don't know, our defensive coordinator is preparing right now and we have no control over the game, but if you were sitting in our coordinator's shoes, how would you try to stifle, Brock Purdy's momentum for this game?
Well, we actually kind of got a good glimpse at that this weekend and a little bit against Baylor too. When a team runs pure zone coverage, he's very comfortable at finding windows. He's very, very good at finding windows, which is when you see pass completion percentages in the 75% plus range. Same against pure man defenses. Or even like a cover two man type thing, where he's very comfortable. He trusts his receivers, and he can throw people open and things like that. And that's you see high completion percentages. Where Brock Purdy has struggled the last two games, Baylor and West Virginia have both done this, where they've been throwing at combo coverages, where you got a couple guys in zone and the rest are in, or you got a couple of guys in man and the rest are in zone, or vice versa. And when he sees combo coverage, he's still young, so he's still learning how to deal with this stuff. But when he sees combo coverage, he has a tendency to get a little bit gun shy and not throw the ball quick. And he'll hold the ball for a little while, and then he might take off, or depending on the situation, he might end up taking a sack. West Virginia had a couple coverage sacks like that last weekend, where they threw a combo man zone coverage, and he struggled reading it a little bit. So If I'm Texas Tech, if I have the personnel to do it, now the trick with combo coverage is you have to have the personnel to do it. You have to have like lockdown corners and linebackers that can be really effective in zone. So if Texas Tech can do it, if Texas Tech thinks they can play a combo man coverage zone, a combo man zone coverage, apologize. Then that would be the first thing that I would do is I would be putting that in the game plan, saying we're going to try to throw as much combo coverage as we can, try to throw as many different blitzers and things like that as we can at Brock, to try to get him on the move and try to confuse him if we can.
Well, I hope you're listening, Patterson, because Levi Stevenson is gunning for your job. But before we transition to the defensive side of things for the Cyclones, we'll take a short break to hear from our sponsors. All right, let's go ahead and switch to the other side of the ball for Iowa State, a team ranked 28th in total defense, like Levi alluded to, holding opponents to an average of 22 points a game. This is another strong defensive unit for the Cyclones. One Red Raider fan have shuddered at since, I mean, John Haycock joined the Iowa State staff 4 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Levi, what and who makes this defense so strong this year?
So that's a deeper question than I think you're prepared for.
Oh, I'm ready.
So, yeah. All right. Well, let's get on rolling then. So obviously John Haycock's the defensive coordinator. He's kind of the mastermind behind all this. It was after the Texas game a few years ago, the last game that, well, we actually saw it a little bit before that. Actually, funny enough, the game that we first really saw the very first glimpses of what Iowa State's defense is now is, two times ago when Texas Tech came up with Pat Mahomes, and, that game went fairly well for Iowa State. That was the first time that we saw the cloud coverage is what kind of the general concept of what we're talking about. Then we really saw it implemented as a full-time scheme after the Texas game a few years ago, which was Jacob Park's last game before Iowa State. Then the next week went to Oklahoma and beat Oklahoma in Norman. That he's kind of the mastermind behind this. It is a complex scheme in how it is used. In its basic concept, it's not really terribly complex, but the way he adjusts things in all these different blitzers he'll bring, because it's based around a 3-man front with two or three linebackers for the most part. But the beauty of the system is that you might be only showing three up front, or you might only be showing four or five guys up front, but as soon as the ball is snapped, just like that, it switches to a 7-man box out of like a traditional 4-3, and then it becomes a really good run stopping formation, because you have really smart safeties that can attack the edge in the running game. Basically the entire objective of the defense, essentially, especially in the running game, is to spill everything to the edges where your safeties can make tackles. So you have big time defensive tackles in Realima and Jamal Johnson, who, if there's a better duo of defensive tackles in the conference, I would like to know who they are. And then you have really, really talented defensive ends that are very disciplined in the run game, that don't let anything break back, anything cut back inside. So what the entire focus on in the run game of the defense is to spill all of the runs outside. And then you have Greg Eisworth and Braxton Lewis, and a few other guys, Arnold Mazuna and things like that. Different safety, Lawrence White. Safeties that will go, the safeties are leading the team in tackles, but it's not because, it's not kind of the way it used to be for Iowa State where the safeties led the team in tackles because every tackle was getting made 12 yards downfield. It's because of this concept now where you have everything spilling to the outside, you're having linebackers plug holes in the middle, and your safeties are then jetting to the outside and making tackles on the edge. So it's really effective in slowing the run down, and they're slowing the run game for that point. It does especially well in like inside zone, which is what West Virginia ran quite a bit under Dana Holgorsen, which is like last year we saw it a little bit where West Virginia had a lot of troubles running the ball because their whole running scheme at that time was kind of an inside zone thing, and that's kind of exactly what Iowa State's defense is built to stop. In the passing game, it's all about limiting deep balls and keeping everything in front of you for the most part, sort of a bend don't break type thing. It bends a lot less than Texas, though, because Texas, people don't realize maybe necessarily know, but they essentially copied exactly almost exactly copied Iowa State's defense. Iowa State's just a lot better at running that defense than Texas is.
Yeah, a lot better.
So it bends quite a bit less than Texas, but it still will bend a little bit. To the annoyance of many Cyclone fans, the 5 to 10 yard route, unless it's like a third and short, the 5 to 10 yard route is going to be open quite a bit, especially like stick routes and certain out routes and things like that. They're going to be open in the game. And if Jed Duffy stays patient and hits a lot of those short routes and just keeps methodically pushing up the field, Texas Tech will be able to move the ball. Now it tightens up in the red zone. So that's, it's a little bit different challenge, but getting up to that point, if they stay patient and they keep just taking yardage when they can, they'll be able to, they'll probably put up a good yardage total. You know, and then the struggle that I would say's defense has had up to this point in the season a little bit has been containing a mobile quarterback, like every single defense that has ever existed. but it's been a special thorn in the side on third down, especially third and long, where for whatever reason, Iowa State just seems to have trouble containing mobile quarterbacks on third down and third and long situations. And it seems like it's been getting better. They didn't really let Charlie Brewer do too much damage on the ground. Max Duggan got a couple of them, but not, you know, he wasn't killing him on the ground. He did pick up a couple on his feet, but wasn't necessarily a huge factor in that game. And then Austin Kendall / Jack Allison were basically not a factor in the running game, but they weren't. They're not really expected to be, though. So this will be another big challenge, probably from the mobile quarterback perspective. This will be the biggest challenge that Iowa State has faced this year, and probably will be the biggest one that they face out. You basically throw Jet Duffy, Sam Ellinger, and Jalen Hurts in as far as just overall danger in the running game. You throw them all in the same group. You could probably maybe safely move Sam Ellinger to the behind Duffy and Jalen Hurts as far as effective runners go.
Right, that guy is a pile of Play-Doh as far as I'm concerned. Although effective sometimes in his dual threat is Ellinger.
we can go all day about Ellinger. It's funny because I think it was West Virginia, the Smoking Musket called that when they were talking when we were previewing last weekend's game. They basically said like they're we're facing Brock Purdy, but he's Sam Ellinger, but good or something like that. And but anyways. So that'll be an interesting challenge. That'll be certainly something to watch on Saturday, is how well Iowa State's defense can contain Jet Duffy in the running game, especially on third down.
Here's an interesting dynamic with that, is that Jet Duffy throughout this year, a theme, or when he's been playing since Oklahoma is when he started, his maturation has changed so much from last year to this year that he's actually become pretty pass first in his mindset, unless there's something drawn up for him to, pull it himself.
Yeah.
On third down, we're seeing.
Nate Stanley from Iowa is also pass first, but he picked up a couple long third downs. So, and he's basically a fat, slow version of Big Ben, if that tells you anything. he's a fatter, slower Ben Roethlisberger. So I have I have zero nice things to say about Iowa.
I get it. We don't have to dig up those corpses.
But even he picked up some long third downs, not like super long, but he picked up some third downs on the ground and stuff like that. So even though Jet Duffy, has progressed as a pocket passer and stuff like that, we both know that he's a very, very good runner and he's very fast. So that will be a point of concern for me. I think what we have seen, he's become a better passer. He's still developing, though, I think is probably a fair way to put it.
Absolutely.
Iowa State's defense is built around creating confusion and tight, tight passing windows. So even like I was saying, where the 5 to 10 yard completions will be there, there's still going to be a tight window that's not going to be wide open. And if Iowa State can tackle well, then they won't go for many yards after the catch. But they'll be open. The windows will be tight. But what we saw against West Virginia, we saw it a little bit more against. We saw a little bit against Charlie Brewer. We saw it more last week, and especially saw it a lot against TCU. And we'll probably continue to see more of it. Is different blitzing angles and things like that. This defense dials up some really weird blitzes. Like they might stunt alignment, but then they'll bring a safety in from the other side of the field on like a wraparound blitz from the other side of the line. Like these crazy things that are really, really hard for a quarterback to see.
Sure.
So we'll see how Jet Duffy handles that. Cause I guarantee you they'll throw some of that stuff to see if Duffy can handle it. If he can, then, he has a chance to pick up some serious yardage. If he can't, then Iowa State will probably have some success on defense and hopefully from my perspective, put Texas Tech in some second and third and long situations.
Right. Well, I wanted to clarify that I wasn't really giving Duffy too much credit when we were talking about the third down scenario. He has matured in the passing presence, but there's been a number of times this year where there's plenty of running room for Duffy. And on third and however long, we decide to pass it 2 yards, 15 yards. I don't understand the play calling this year.
It sounds more like a play calling issue than a Jet Duffy
issue. It's mostly a play calling issue. But I will say that Duffy is not he's not recognizing that there's a lot of room to run, or he has too much faith that the receivers will be open on the original play, that there may be some scenarios that you'll be surprised that he doesn't run and Iowa State prevents a third down conversion.
Yeah, it'll be a weird interesting chess match to watch, is to watch that balance of how much is Iowa State going to respect the running game of Duffy. I hope plenty, just at least to start with, you know, unless he, you know, just doesn't run ever. But you know, I hope they'll respect it quite a bit, especially to begin with. But then we'll see, you know, what does Duffy do to take advantage of any space that Iowa State does give him? Or, you know, what does he do with his arm? You know, is he able to complete passes beyond 15 yards, you know, pushing it where windows get tighter? Or are they gonna try to push it deep? You know, it'll be really, with TJ Vasher, it'll be really interesting to watch that chess match between Duffy and Haycock.
Well, I can tell you now, I think it's gonna all come down to the momentum that Iowa State lets Duffy build. If we look at the Oklahoma State game, Duffy was able to, at the beginning, he tried to throw a deep ball way off. A little bit later, deep ball, you know, a little bit more off, a little less off, but still not on. And then it was on, and then it was just on for the rest of the game. So Oklahoma State gives you guys a good blueprint of Duffy at his best. And then you get the Baylor game is a really good blueprint for what it looks like to keep Duffy out of momentum, which keeps him from being efficient. So if Iowa State's, you know, this cloud coverage can stay effective in limiting Duffy's just efficiency, then that'll pay absolute dividends to Iowa State, especially as you move into the third and fourth quarters.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because I would guess that Texas Tech will probably try to connect with Vasher downfield at least a couple times early in the game to try to get some momentum going, to try to set the tone early. And you know, Iowa State, for everything that has been good on defense, wherever, there's been a couple blown coverages this year by the young corners, where they just didn't cover a deep ball well at all. Baylor took advantage of that with a couple different double moves. All of their touchdowns came on double moves that fooled a safety. So I'm sure they'll probably be looking at that. They'll probably send Vasher on a couple double moves, maybe like a deep post off of a double move or something along those lines. And it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them try to push the ball downfield. And then obviously the success of that will be entirely dependent on Jet Duffy and how accurate he is there.
Well, I guess additional on this kind of train of thought, is there a matchup that you're really looking forward to in this game? You might have alluded to it earlier and I'm just forgetting, but I'd love to like touch on it again.
We'll do one on each side of the ball.
Sure.
So when Texas Tech has the ball, when they're on offense, the matchup that's going to be very interesting to watch is, I would guess, because I think Orion Vance will be out again, so Mike Rose will be back to the middle linebacker spot, where he is very, very, very good. I think Mike Rose's ability to drop back coverage but then contain Duffy on the run, I think, is going to be a really, really critical matchup on the other side. And part of it is the defensive line too, getting pressure. And because if the defensive line can get pressure with three guys like they have been in the past, then this could be a tough game for Texas Tech to move the ball, because obviously then there's not a lot of time to throw and there's still eight guys in coverage. So that'll be interesting to watch. If an individual matchup, I would say Mike Rose's ability to kind of patrol the middle of the field there and then hopefully contain Duffy on the runs. But the defensive line against the offensive line will be an interesting one to watch as well. When Iowa State has the ball, in my mind, the most critical matchup there is going to be the Texas Tech linebacking core against Breece Hall. Because I think Iowa State, now with them finding some success in the running game last week against West Virginia, and Breece having a very, very good game, I think they're going to try to keep feeding him the ball, get him more reps, get him into a rhythm, and try to get him going again. Because Breece Hall is an attacking running back. He's not like a Darren Sproles guy where he's like, you know, super, super quick feet, make a guy miss in a phone booth. He's a little bit more of a one cut type of guy, but he eats up yardage in a hurry and he runs with bad intentions. When he meets contact, he looks for contact. He doesn't just run to it. He tries to run through it, which at the beginning of the season, he wasn't doing that necessarily. Part of it is being a true freshman. You're not up to speed with the college game. But now we saw it in West Virginia where he's starting to get confidence and he's starting to try to run through tackles now, where he may not make it through the tackle, but he's still falling forward for a couple yards. So if the linebackers can, one, contain him on the edge and bring him down right away instead of allowing him to fall forward for an extra few yards every run, then that could be a huge difference. Because if Iowa State's picking up 3 yards of carry on the ground, they're going to have to rely on the passing game, and then we'll see what happens from there. But if they're picking up 5, 6, 7, 8 yards of carry on the, not eight, but that'd be a lot. But, anywhere, 5, 6, 7 yards of carry on the ground, it becomes very, very difficult for Texas Tech, because now they have to really load up in the run game, and then you have five to 10 different receivers throughout the game that they have to keep their eye on. So it just becomes a significantly more difficult game for Texas Tech if Iowa State is able to successfully run the ball. And I think a lot of that falls back. Now, partially, obviously, can't run the ball without a good offensive line. But I think up to this point, the Iowa State offensive line has actually been pretty decent in the running game. And a bigger fault has actually fallen more so on the running backs, not taking advantage of all the yardage that's been blocked for them. And I think it looks like Breece Hall is finally taking advantage, doing his best to take advantage of his blocking and to take advantage of the yards that's being blocked for him. So we'll see what that looks like and if it allows Iowa State to move the ball on the ground effectively.
Well, yeah, I guess what's something definitely to pay attention to is always the run game, because if you can't get a good run game going, then how is anybody going to be effective in the passing game unless you're just, I don't know.
I mean, Texas Tech did it for quite a few years.
That's true, but we've also had talent
above the mean.
Yeah, way above the mean. So, we had Patrick Mahomes, and
we're living so far above the mean, it's crazy right now. So I'm in that boat with
you. Dude, you just gotta ride it while you got it.
That's where I'm at, man. Like I'm gonna take this opportunity to be a little bit cocky because I know it's gonna come back down at some point.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Just be you and then deal with the repercussions later. Just crack another bush.
I'm just gonna be cocky and apologize later. It's fine.
Sports media, that's what it's all about.
That's exactly. If you're not dishing hot takes, what are you even doing?
Damn right. Okay, well, past the X's and O's, Levi, how do you see things shaking out in Lubbock? What's your score prediction here, man?
So
hey,
because Texas Tech's hard to get a read on, because it seems like there's some times where they struggle and then there's other times where they look like they could, they could hang with Oklahoma.
Well, put it into context of being at home and on homecoming. But yeah, we did not hang with Oklahoma at all. So
no, but but there's been times where they look like they could give them a run for their money. But then there's other times where they didn't hang with Oklahoma. So, a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde type team, which Iowa State has sort of, every team is that to a certain extent, but for that reason, Texas Tech has been a little bit hard to get a read on exactly what's going on. But like you said, it's Lubbock's a tough place to play on homecoming. It's 11 a.m. game, which is interesting.
It's the prime time. Fox's new prime time.
It is the prime time. Iowa State has played on, I think that we've only played one non 11 o'clock game up to this point, or two, I should say. Four out of our six games up to this point have been 11 a.m. games. So I'm assuming it's not supposed to rain, right?
Right. I think it'll be pretty dry. Okay. Dry and windy, Texas Tech.
Dry and windy. Well, there you go. Iowa State's played in the rain more often than it has not this season. So we'll see if that has affected them. I still think the way the Iowa State offense is rolling right now, I feel very good about it. And especially if Breece Hall can continue to do what he's been doing, the interesting part is that, with Iowa State being way up there in the country in yards per play, a lot of that was coming without a consistent running game, especially from the running backs. And Breece Hall, by himself had 26 carries and for 130 something yards. I mean, that's a workhorse running back bringing home workhorse yardage. And if they can continue to do that in conference play, I feel very, very good about it. and that'll let them kind of control the tempo of the game, keep the defense, get the defense as much rest as they can. Though this past weekend, Iowa State did show off some fairly impressive depth, because right now, because Jaquan Bailey is out indefinitely, probably for the season. Greg Eisworth missed the game against West Virginia, and Orion Vance was knocked out in the first quarter and didn't play the rest of the game. So they're missing arguably their three best play. They're missing arguably the best player at each level of the defense. And they came out and they held West Virginia to 40 something yards in the second half. The defense did not miss a beat with not even having those three guys. Zach Peterson stepped up, got his first career sack, and had I think he had six tackles and two or three for a loss. Don't quote me on the exact numbers, but somewhere in that neighborhood. Matt Leo had a great game. Mike Rose moved back over to middle linebacker and had an excellent game. Lawrence White and Arnold Azuna both had good games. The defense got to flex its muscles last weekend, just from a depth perspective, where they played a ton of guys, and it held up structurally very, very well, even with backups in. So that'll be interesting to watch too. And what's the temperature supposed to be on Saturday?
It's
pretty nice.
Yeah, it looks like I think we're in fall. It's hard to get a read in Lubbock, but it looks like the highs a pleasant 77. So no Baylor situation.
There you go. Just a great day for football.
It is. It really is.
So that'll be interesting. So that'll be good. That'll be good. Good weather. This is kind of a long drawn out way to say, I think I like Iowa State's chances just because I think they're the more complete team right now.
Yeah, sure.
I would say there's a pretty good argument that it's the best defense in the conference. And then now you have an offense that's moving the ball at a very, very, very high level, and it'll all come down to Iowa State. I think we've mentioned a few different things throughout this podcast about different things that could be huge, huge keys in the game. But I think as long as Iowa State is not killing itself on special teams or turning the ball over or committing dumb penalties, I think they'll have the advantage going in. But if the defense still continues to struggle in third down and Jet Duffy is allowed to run and pick up lots of yardage on the ground, Texas Tech is definitely going to keep this close and with a very, very real chance of winning this game if Iowa State can't contain that running game.
So I like
our chances, but okay. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay. So the line at one touchdown is pretty good for you. Iowa State's favor. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I would have put it closer than that, just because I think there's one team that is a more complete team. The other team has some really high peaks that could show up whenever. So I don't know if you'd put it less than that, but more than that would be, I would never put it more than that.
Right.
Especially since it's on the road. So I think, I would have put it, anywhere between the 5.5 and 8.5 range wouldn't have surprised me. Less than that would have been a little bit, just because Iowa State has looked very, very good the last couple weeks, especially in October. And Texas Tech came off, a disappointing and probably undeserved loss. We don't necessarily need to get into that.
Sure.
There's actually, it's interesting because that call could have very significant ramifications for a lot farther beyond that game.
Absolutely.
Because if Baylor had lost that game, then Iowa State is back to being even / having a one game up on them in this conference title race.
Man, we tried our best
at the end of the season. So I'm certainly not chalked. Don't take this as me chalking up a win this week or anything like that.
Right,
but
right.
In our theoretical case where Iowa State goes through, wins through Oklahoma State, loses to Oklahoma, beats Texas, beat Kansas State, you have two conference losses, and then Baylor has two conference losses, but they lose the tiebreaker to Baylor because they lost in Waco.
Yep.
But if not for that bad call last weekend and Texas Tech wins, Baylor has an extra loss, crisis averted.
Right.
So it's interesting the ramifications of that one singular bad call, still a loss. I think even in that kind of thing, where you say, did this one play potentially change the outcome of the game? Maybe, but there's a lot of other things that could have been done up to that point to avoid it. So you're looking at, you know, loss is still a loss, a win still a win. That's why, like, when we look at, you know, our two losses on the season, they were by 3 points, but you know what? They were self-inflicted. You know, that we should have won both of those games and we didn't. And that doesn't change anything. We could say, yeah, we could start chalking up moral victories all we want. We could say we're 6-0 in moral, you know, we have 6 moral victories on the win, for moral victories on the season. But, you know, in reality, there's 2 losses on the schedule and they were our fault. So, you know, you live with that and you learn. And that's probably why, just because of the general momentum of the two teams right now, I think is probably why it ended up at a touchdown. But, you know, if it showed up at 4.5 or 5.5, it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. I mean, it all makes sense to me. It all makes sense to me. And all good points, Levi, throughout this whole pod, a lot of good points, a lot of things that I think Texas Tech fans can chew on as we wait for Saturday's primetime 11 a.m. kickoff. Is there anything else you think we should add in here? Anything else you want?
I think we've got, I think we touched on most of the bases. One thing we didn't touch on is special teams. I'm not sure what Texas Tech special teams look like, but Iowa State's has been wildly inconsistent. The punting has been good. Kick return, when they actually return it, has been good for the most part. Punt returns are just non-existent. We don't return punts, just period. and nobody returns punts on us. It's the weirdest thing. Punting, like, is entirely on the punters. There's punt return units are not a thing in Iowa State games. It's the weirdest thing. So we'll see if the kickers have been inconsistent. Connor Sally wasn't, like, he hasn't been bad. I think he's like 7 of 10 or something like that, which isn't terrible. But for whatever reason, 2 games ago, he didn't kick a field goal at all. And last game we kicked 1 field goal. And it was the redshirt freshman that came in, redshirt freshman scholarship kicker instead of Connor Sally. So, nobody really has a great feel for what's going on in the Iowa State, special teams room at the moment. But We'll see, because Joe Rivera has been punting very well, and that has been able to flip some fields and pin opponents deep, which is, you know, against TCU that led to a strip sack and a touchdown. But, you know, we'll see if the punt coverage is poor, or, you know, Joe Rivera isn't on his game, or we start missing field goals, you know, like those types of things can really turn the tide of games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the over-under... special teams might be the actual key factor of this game. Who knows?
Honestly, it probably is going to be, because we're talking about all this other crap that's like, oh, this could be meaningful. This could be, you know what? It's going to be some dumbass special teams turnover or something.
Oh, that's what
it's
no. going to be. That would just be the that's worst be. Thing. That would be the worst thing for Iowa State.
That would
State
be
fans.
A very on brand shit. That would be just very on brand for Iowa State.
It would this season, wouldn't it?
Just like that's what that was like the TCU game. We were talking with Frogs of War, and we're like, both teams got good defenses and inconsistent offenses, whatever. We're like, oh, there's no way. Like, and the over-under for the game is like 34, and we're all saying, like, bet the under. And because, like, the 2 previous games was like 10, it was 14-7 and like 10-7 or whatever it was. Like, no points. And what happened? 49-31. Like, it was just a shootout. Just Iowa State games never, ever, ever go as you predicted they would be. So if you're predicting a shootout, or if you're predicting... No matter what, if you're predicting a shootout, it's not going to be. If you're predicting a tough sledding defensive game, it's not going to be that either. Guess what? You're always wrong.
2019 is weird, people. Get on board. Okay.
I would say football is weird.
That's true. So is Tech. Okay. Finally, Levi. I know you've been hanging on to this for 3 years and just rediscovered it today. For all of our listeners who probably have never traveled to Iowa, nonetheless, Ames. Levi, what makes the city of Ames so great?
Okay, so what we should probably fill them in what this is stemming from. So 3 years ago, 2016, I didn't even know about this article before today, but it showed up in our comments on one of our articles. And it was a ranking by Viva the Matadors of the Big 12, of the cities in the Big 12. And Ames ended up at like number 6 or 7 or something like that. And it was behind like Austin and Fort Worth. It was behind like Lubbock, Austin, Fort Worth, Lawrence, and a few others. I don't remember what the other ones were.
Lawrence? Oh, hell.
I've actually heard Lawrence is decent.
Okay. Okay.
My main bone to pick with this list is Austin and Fort Worth, because neither of those are college towns. They may be cool towns, but they're not college towns.
I agree with that. Yeah.
That'd be like saying like Los Angeles is the best college town in the Pac-12. not a college town. It may be a cool town, but it's not a college town. Austin, obviously, may be best known for being the home of Texas, but it's not a college town. It's not. It's too big. Fort Worth, not a college town. I mean,
two big cities that nobody shows up for their sports.
I love TCU. Like, I really actually really enjoy watching TCU play. I think Gary Patterson's an amazing coach. And I actually have a lot of good friends that are TCU fans, and we're great friends with Frogs of War over there. Shout out to Melissa and Jamie. But, you know, even they would probably admit that Fort Worth is not a TCU town. Like, it's there's lots of TCU fans there because that's where it is. Sure. But Fort Worth is not a college town, you know, per se. Ames is a college town. Lubbock's a college town. Lawrence is a college town. Manhattan's a college town. Morgantown is a college town. Those are, you know, those are all, you know, even like something like Waco is not really a college town.
Right. Waco's just a dumpster.
Yeah, Waco's Waco. but so what makes Ames great is that it's a great one. It's a great size where it's like in the 60,000. I think when the students are not there, it's like 50 or 60,000 people. It's got, you know, and then when the students are there, it's about 100, you know, just shy of 100. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. It's like 80,000. But it's got every single, it's got pretty much everything you're looking for that like a big, like big city amenity. It's got every chain restaurant you can think of. It's got excellent, atmosphere, just the mood and the energy in town is fantastic. The whole town is basically, it's literally built around Iowa State University. Iowa State University was there first. It was one room schoolhouse in the middle of a cornfield. And then they built the university, and they built the town around it. So it's big.
Okay, you know, the town Iowa is a big State donut. A land grant?
Yes, Iowa State is the first land grant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Iowa History State existed 2 years before the Morrill Act, and it was and after the Morrill Act was passed, it was the first university given land grant designation. And then Kansas State was built as the first land grant university that was actually built as a land grant school. Wow. But Iowa State was the first land grant school. So. Built out in the middle of nowhere. Then Ames is, you know, the city of Ames is basically a big donut around Iowa State. So the whole town is centered around the university. Everything just has kind of an Iowa State theme to it. It's growing quickly. There's a ton of really great industry there. You know, I've seen lots of different rankings where they rank Ames like in the top five college towns across the country. It's got the lowest unemployment rate in the country, I believe, last time I saw. It's like 1.2% or something silly like that. And when I was in college, this is about 5 years ago now, but it was ranked by Men's Health magazine, I think, as the healthiest town in the country. You know, things like it just it's an amazing place to live. The people there are fantastic. It's got the Midwest charm, Midwest hospitality, that kind of thing. So it's, you know, it lives up to all of those stereotypes. It's just a lot of great salt of the earth people that next year when Texas Tech comes up here, if any Red Raider fans come up here and they want a tailgate, walk around the parking lots. I'm pretty sure you'll find somebody that'll offer you a beer and probably a pork tenderloin sandwich or something. You know, it's just a great place to live. And it's close to a bunch of different, you know, it's not necessarily close per se, like you can't just drive there in 10 minutes, but you're only a couple of hours away from the Twin Cities. You're about 3.5 hours away from Kansas City. You're about 4 hours from Chicago. You're like right in the middle of a bunch of fun stuff. It's just a great place to live. And it's a great place to be. I don't live in Ames, but it's just a lot of fun. There's a lot of great bars, restaurants, everything.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the insight. I think a lot of people just became a little bit better as humans on this earth now that they know Ames isn't a dump.
It's actually a really nice city. They keep it up really well. Just even from just a general cleanliness of the city, it's a very clean city.
Yeah, you got to appreciate that in this day and age. Yes. Plus,
it's got the best drunk food on planet Earth. And my Wisconsin Badgers fans over at Bucky's Fifth Quarter can vouch for me on this. That Superdog is the best drunk food ever made. I feel like I'm going to miss some of the ingredients on here, but it's a hot dog with potato chips, ranch, pineapple, and a few other and cheese and shit like that. It's crazy, but it's amazing.
Golly, the only time that sounds good is probably when I'm going to be drunk. So I'll have to notch that down next year when I head up to Ames.
That's why they only put it in the bar district.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, that's going to about do it for us today. If you've enjoyed this interview with Levi Stevenson, then, man, be sure to like, subscribe, give us some comments. We love the feedback you're giving us. Levi, where can people find your best content on the internet?
Well, my best content is through the Wide Right Twitter account, which is DwightRTNattyLT, or WideRightNattyLight.com. I have a personal Twitter. I divide my tweets up. I talk anything Iowa State related, I put on the Wide Right account. Anything not Iowa State related, I talk about, like, I don't know, 2K, barbecue, or like Xbox, barbecue, woodworking, random stuff like that. Whatever pops into my head. That's at Levi R. Stev, STEV. So LEVIRSTEV.
I think you and I have both fallen down the black hole of assuming the identities of our Twitter, or of our, you know, blog Twitter accounts, which is fine. That's why we're both so fun. And if you don't follow Wide Right, don't feel bad, because they don't need the help. Everybody loves them, and it makes sense why. You can also,
feel free
of course,
to follow us though if you don't.
Absolutely, I'm just kidding around. Just a little bit of cornpocalypse fun. You can also, of course, find previous and future episodes of the Air Raid podcast on your favorite streaming medium. For Levi and myself, stay wrecked, people.